Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles. I am your host, Ross Boland, here as always with my dear friend, Mr. Barrett Dudley. Barrett.
Hey, happy
end of the world.
Happy holidays, my friend.
As we know it.
Happy holidays.
But I feel fine.
Key on the emphasis on the days, D-A-Z-E, huh?
Sure.
Am I right? This week, huh?
I suppose.
In between Christmas and New Year's, huh?
Oh, yeah, man. This is the twilight zone. Everybody keeps remarking as if the rest of the year was completely normal.
God, I don't even know what day it is.
Dude, I haven't known what day it is.
Is it Wednesday? Is it Saturday?
2019, man. So
memes. Do the memes. I'm doing a meme.
Great meme, Barrett.
Thank you.
Great meme to start the show. speaking of the end of the world as we know it, I watched Don't Look Up.
Oh, God. I've been watching everything, Ross. I've just watched everything.
Yeah, you've watched too much shit.
I've watched a lot, but yes, I watched...
An excessive amount, I would say.
I did watch this this film, Don't Look Up.
I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's on Netflix. It's called Don't Look Up, starring, Leonardo DiCaprio, J-Law, Timothée Chalamet.
Jonah Hill.
Ariana Grande, Meryl Streep.
Scott Mescudi.
Chris Evans pops up. Kid Cudi. There's many cameos, I believe it's pronounced. And what a treat. Anyway, it's made by the same guy who did,
Anchorman.
Did he do Anchorman? The Big Short. Did he do Anchorman as well?
Yeah.
That was a progression.
Also Step Brothers. This is Adam McKay.
Okay, so he's done both, like, the
produced,
Oscar-winning version of comedies.
Produced and directed the first episode of Succession.
And then the ones that are, goofy as hell.
Yeah, too. Very famously, he was a writer on SNL.
Vice.
Worked hand-in-hand a lot with Will Ferrell in his SNL days.
Right.
And then they went on to start this production company. They had a big hand in launching, like, Funny or Die, or they bought Funny or Die, or something like that.
Yeah, that didn't go well.
They did Step Brothers. It did wonderful until...
Funny or Die did?
Well, yeah, until,
I just feel like they bought it right before internet advertising completely fell apart.
Well, it was very successful, and then internet advertising fell apart. They were victims of the whole thing, Facebook, algorithm, yada, yada, that a lot of companies,
Zuckerberg,
not named Barstool, succumbed to. Can
we bleep that?
They did Anchorman 2, Step Brothers. They launched their own production company. They produced and essentially, are the people behind Succession. Adam McKay did Big Short and Vice. So he transitioned into from like this, like, you know, almost like slapstick,
right,
comedy that still does have underlying tones of satire and parody and larger messaging, and then moved over into this more serious dramedy type stuff now his latest release is this Don't Look Up film, which is right to your brain on Netflix.
It's kind of a mix of all of the things he's toyed with throughout his career, I would say.
Yeah,
I went in really dry, right, as I am wont to do.
Lovely picture.
I don't like knowing things about movies before I watch them anymore.
Uh-huh.
When they're ones that I'm anticipating, because people tend to build it up too much or hype it up too much, and it can damage your experience with the movie. So, and just as podcasters, we're exposed to people's opinions pretty constantly.
Right.
I knew this was one to anticipate, and I put on the blinders. I stayed away from all the coverage, and I saw a few, like, you know, people, like, glowing reviews, I would say,
okay,
on Twitter, but I don't really follow anybody on Twitter that would dish out a bad review any movie unless it was that they loved it.
Okay.
I don't follow a lot of critics, I'll put it that way.
Got it.
And so watching this, I'll just say my first takeaway was, like, it wasn't really what I expected. Because I knew it was a doomsday film, mm-hmm, right? I knew the premise was, and I guess there will be light spoilers henceforth, and probably some heavy ones as well, if you haven't watched Don't Look Up on Netflix, which would be odd to me. I thought it was going to be more dramatic throughout, where it kind of picked its spots, right? Like, the ending of the film is obviously pretty heavy for about 20 minutes,
mm-hmm,
straight. But throughout the course of the movie, like, you start heavy, finding out, like, this situation and seeing that it's not going to be handled well by the government. And then it gets hilarious for a while. It's just kind of so absurd that it's very, very funny and light. And it has, and Jonah Hill and Meryl Streep's characters are so ridiculous in their, you know, caricaturization of our politicians of late.
Sure.
That it adds this lightness, but then that gets dark too, because you're like, well, this isn't that far from the truth and possibly, you know, happening, which becomes scary. In the end, it was like brilliant. It was this mix of all these different things that sort of encapsulated this whole Donald Trump into the pandemic experience as an American.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is tight.
My feelings were far more mixed on it. I thought that it had some good, I thought it had some decent moments. I thought it had some good laughs. But it's hard when you are comparing it to Adam McKay's like previous films, especially The Big Short, which I consider, if not a top five, easily a top 10 favorite movie of all time for me.
Okay. Like top five, potentially.
One of my favorite movies ever. I'll leave it at that. And what The Big Short did so successfully.
Is it before or after Fast and the Furious, though?
It's hard to say. I would have to really, you know, really construct, put a lot of data and
that
you
would
know,
take math, lots and lots of math. Yes,
scientific. That I would have to use the scientific method to hypothesize and experiment and figure out those rankings. So I'll just say that they're on the same playing field for me.
Fair enough. It's a tie.
And you know if I'm putting something on the plane with Fast and the Furious, then it means a lot to me.
It's to be taken very seriously.
What I love so much about The Big Short is that it exposed all of these flaws in our system around a topic that it was extremely dense and that I don't think a lot of people had like a full grasp on unless you were right in the middle of it, right?
More revealing.
Unless you lost a lot, unless you were part of the housing crisis. And we were... But part of that is that we were very, very, very insulated from that economic collapse here in Texas, especially.
Right. We heard about it. We knew about it, but it wasn't felt nearly as badly here.
No, not like in places like Florida and Arizona, where there was like all this speculative property and like people were getting $2 million loans when they were making $50,000 a year. Like there was, you know, it wasn't like that here.
As much.
It's pretty well known that Texas's economy is very well insulated.
It's like the mafia.
So
recession proof.
It was really eye opening to me, and I felt like I really learned a lot.
Sure,
not to mention the story is really, really well constructed. The characters are well thought out. They are not necessarily caricatures like they were in this film.
Right.
And so it did things a lot more with a lot more subtlety. And I thought that it was...
Then Don't Look Up, for sure.
Yes. And it gave me a really compelling story with real compelling characters and kind of taught me something that I didn't really know a lot about.
Now, right,
I contrast that to Don't Look Up, which kind of, in a way, talks to me like I'm an idiot. Because the thing is, I know that the climate crisis is a ginormous, real problem. And like
the climate crisis. Okay. So we're jumping to the climate crisis from the meteor.
That's what this movie is about.
Adam McKay's.
It's an allegory
definition.
For the climate crisis. Yeah.
I think it could be an allegory for a lot of things, is my point.
Okay.
But yes, so, with DiCaprio easiest to tie to the climate crisis.
Let's talk about that in a second because that's part of what I liked about the movie. But the main theme of this movie is that something is coming towards Earth that is going to destroy Earth.
Right.
And nobody wants to actually do anything about it. And
it's the Greta Thunberg film. Yeah.
Right.
Like I'm very upset she didn't have a cameo, by the way.
There's a million different spins on this to make it not such a big deal. Some people don't even believe in it, right? Like there's all, like this was an allegory for the climate crisis.
I think the jury's still out on science, Barrett.
And it was like, okay, so... Nobody watching this, it's like the John Oliver thing, right? Like, nobody watching John Oliver, nobody watching Don't Look Up needs to be taught that the climate crisis is real, necessarily. And so it's kind of like...
Preaching to the choir?
It's a little bit preaching to the choir. It was a little bit on the nose in spots. And I just, like, you know, at the end of it, I was like, okay, well, I still know that the climate crisis is a very, very real problem. And I'm not sure what I gleaned from this film that taught me anything I didn't already know.
Self-righteousness. That's what I gleaned from it.
It reminded me... You know what film it actually reminded me a lot of, and I thought about this while watching it, is the second Borat film.
That's not what you want to be compared to.
We had good things to say about that.
But like aging wise, I'm like, I'm never going to watch that again. I don't want to have that experience again.
Yeah. Well, I would never watch this film again either.
Maybe one day, far from now. But it's not a rewatcher for me. I mean, but neither is The Big Short, man. Like, that was one that I watched, went, holy shit. And then I'll probably go back to it eventually when it's like not so, the wound isn't so fresh, but that feels recent. Like just this whole clusterfuck is kind of a big combined period of time for me at this point, the last 20 years in America.
Yeah.
But all in all, I agree with you. It's like, I do think there's a reason he took the angle he did and that they took the angle they did with this, because whereas with The Big Short, there was a lot to say about how that unfolded, the details that people like me, the basic people that have no fucking clue what was going on, needed to know. Whereas with this, it's kind of like, I mean, I thought one of the lines that really stood out was Jennifer Lawrence saying, "You're giving them way too much credit. They're not even smart enough to be as evil as you're imagining them to be."
Yeah.
And that was one of the moments that I was like, they didn't have as much to play with. Because I think trying to give us a Trumpy president with the son, chief of staff, and Jonah Hill.
Yep.
And I mean, obviously, look, they didn't do a very good. I thought they probably should have mixed in a little more Joe, some Sleepy Joe type of humor with it. They only went right with it. They only went after the right in terms of the politicians, at least with those two characters, which is kind of like that's the on the nose part for me. Where I'm like, okay, I mean, everybody in comedy in Hollywood's been shitting on the right wing for most of my life. I don't know how productive that is anymore. And, you know, certainly you need something to counter Matt Damon's propaganda film he made. But it was just it's an odd topic to tackle. It's kind of like, yes, I think... Absolutely, the most fitting allegory is climate change, right, for the meteor. But I saw a lot of people on Twitter discussing, you know, the fact that they aren't confident that if something like this happened, a meteor, and we hear about meteors, they'll be like, hey, go outside on the 29th of May and you'll see this fucking meteor. And I'm like, all right, and then I go out there and I can't see fuck because of the pollution, and I go back inside. But those have got to be close, or they were. Thousands of years ago, because that's how vision works or something crazy. I don't know science, Barrett, again. But it doesn't feel that far-fetched, you know, that we could get hit by a meteor. So I saw
it's not that far-fetched.
I saw people being like, yeah, I'm never going to sleep the same. Just considering that, like, what is that called? The bureaucracy in America that keeps anything from happening, anything productive, and lobbyists, which we got a lot of references to in this. One of the guys, one of the old naked fat men on the spaceship.
Yeah.
Was a lobbyist. But yeah, there was like four endings to this, by the way, if you didn't sit through all the credits. Mm-hmm. It was Lord of the Rings. They went three different fucking exit scenes. Meryl Streep gets eaten by a Brontorock. one of the better moments in the film. But yeah, it did kind of hover in this weird space where it's like, do you want me to take you seriously or not? What are you saying? What is the... And it really felt like a vehicle for Leonardo DiCaprio to unleash, like, 15 years of frustration.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there were parts of this he wasn't acting at all. He was just like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? Why aren't you listening to me? And I was like, that's just him. Just talking straight up. Not scripted.
I think that you kind of said already that, like, this was a mix of all the things that Adam McKay has done.
Yeah.
And it did. Those scenes, like with the morning show, you know, with Kate Blanchett and Tyler Perry, like as the two hosts, like those were SNL sketches, dude. Like those were complete, parody. parodies of what our kind of like, you know, nonchalant, everything has to be an optimist spin, like the kind of
put all this personality and charisma and everything.
You know, talk shows are that don't really say anything or comment on anything. You know, and then it's like we've got the like you talked about the Jonah Hill and the Meryl Streep characters who are very clear parodies as well. And so it's just like, yeah, I didn't know what to make of it. And then you get like a scene that's like very real and heartfelt at the end where they're sitting around the dinner table. And there's like that was like the best scene to me because it was like
it was very good.
The kind of they dropped the pretense a little bit. The characters did and the film kind of did. And they just like let these people who didn't feel real throughout the film have real moments.
Sure.
You know, that is a moment that would be shared upon like true impending, you know, extinction, essentially.
Right, right.
Right. Like we are all about to die. How do we handle this? How do we operate sitting around this dinner table with a few loved ones? And like, how does that go? And it, you know, you could feel the stakes there. You could feel the weight of that. And so I appreciated that. You mentioned also that this could be allegorical for other things as well. And I think that was probably the best takeaway. This film was written and was supposed to happen without a pandemic.
Before it.
Right. This was, and it was very, so it was big news when this film was able to like go back to shooting.
Damn. Okay. I didn't even put that into play. Yeah.
During the pandemic.
Okay.
It just so happens that like a lot of what it was saying
also applied to the pandemic.
Tied very well to the pandemic as well.
And that's one of the things they did well, though. They made it so any divisive topic film can be applied to.
Yeah, and so that was the best kind of piece that this film tackled for me. Wasn't so much like, hey, the climate crisis is real, we're not doing anything about it, but more so the way that like anything that seems black and white can be taken, filtered through our bureaucratic government and through our news media and through our capitalist private companies
and made into utter horseshit
and like spun in any direction that they see fit and brought to the masses and like create these factions, right?
Yeah.
And so that was
the beauty of the movie to me.
That was kind of fun to see. Is like there's people that are just like they don't believe the meteor is real.
This was a full blown South Park or Rick and Morty episode at that
right,
point.
Right. It was very. It did have a lot of South Park to it as well. You know. So you've got your meteor deniers, and then you've got the people that
for the jobs the meteor will provide,
and then the people in the middle that are they believe in the meteor, but they are for the jobs that the meteor will create. What I think it did. So I mean, kind of in the way that it was presented. Yes.
Yeah, that might be saying something too.
I think it was.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's what I liked is its kind of presentation of our current environment can literally take anything
and make it shit
and split people
yeah.
about it.
So the. Like
in okay. the way that it's delivered to you.
And that was my big takeaway. That was the whole movie for me. Once I was like, yeah, I'm not going to learn anything here politically. Like we all know our politics are fucked in America. That's not news. It's not fun anymore to talk about, really. I think we're all just like, God damn it. Are you serious? At all times. And like candidates wise, I mean, look, man, we say they're parody. I've been paying attention. It ain't really.
Right.
Like, that was as fucking close. I mean, I don't know how you parody this. That was the thing about the last 8 years, really, that got so absurd. It's like, the parody has become the reality.
Yes.
Like, we are the Simpsons. Like, every political fucking thing they ever did in the Simpsons in the 80s and 90s has now come to fruition because we are morons. Like, I genuinely believe that part of the film, it is saying to everyone watching, like, look, we are all idiots and we're all complicit and we're all irresponsible. Because if you frame it up around the Greta Thunberg, Thunberg?
I don't fucking that sounds right.
Now I'm just disrespecting a child by mispronouncing her last name.
Thunberg, I think is correct.
That's the argument, right? Is like, how dare you operate giving away our future because you don't, because you know you won't be here and you don't give a shit. And when you apply that to everyday life for everybody watching, for me, I mean, it's like it shows you how selfish we all are. Like it shows you just how stupid we are. If the legitimate truth is that we are fucking the planet to the point that it's going to die, and we don't care enough to change. Like, which really we barely do. Like, we half fucking recycle. Half that shit doesn't even get used. You have to, like, wash it out for it to really be recyclable.
Yeah.
Then they're throwing out half of it anyway because it's got, like, shit on it that you didn't know wasn't recyclable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, there's a million examples, but we just got to electric cars. The Jetsons was the fucking 80s, bro. What have we been doing this entire...
Jetsons like, might have been earlier than that, man.
Maybe even the 60s. I don't even remember. The Jetsons was a long-ass time ago. And we just now got around to Elon Musk. And it's just like... And then he's a clown. And now, it is a mess. It is. And I think it's amazing that this was a movie that was supposed to come out pre-pandemic, because I think it would have hit, or without a pandemic being a thing, it would have hit completely different for me. I don't think I would have enjoyed it nearly as much. I think the pandemic gave us sights on, look, yes, politics have been applied to everything in the country, and that's a massive problem that causes huge division around every topic and makes everything impossible to solve.
Yep.
But also, like, it's not just politics. It's just an unwillingness to get along in some areas, and just an unwillingness to let go of stuff that really, frankly, is not worth fighting over. And this movie did a really good job of showing, like, I mean, even with Leo's character fucking the hot news lady, you know, that was the most, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, airmailed storyline ever, when he's sitting down and they start calling him the hot scientist. And I was like, oh no, he's going to plow this chick. And lose himself, right? Mm-hmm. Lose sight of himself, even as he's the one who's trying to tell everyone else not to lose sight of themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Or find sight of themselves. And his nice, comely, homely wife, whichever. One of those is a word. Perhaps. Damn, what's the word I'm looking...
Homely, I think is
fucking regular, bro, is what I mean. Take it or leave it. And he abandons her for smoking hot fake news lady, who gives a shit about the world and hates most people. It was just airmailed. The whole storyline, and then him being like, "Oh, I fucked up," and going back to his wife. That whole thing was just sort of airmailed.
Yeah,
but it led to one of the more powerful scenes in the movie, where you've got the table.
Yeah. And I liked the table. I said that the Timmy Chalamet cameo, which then wasn't actually a cameo because he's like part of the crew, and he's like riding along. That was weird as well.
I loved it though.
I don't know why Timmy C was in this movie. His character brought nothing except for like a spiritual grounding.
I couldn't disagree more. I thought he was the best comic relief in the movie. He was so good, bro, because he was lovable and likable. You're like, oh, this is just a stupid fucking side character. Why is Timmy C doing this? And then suddenly he's busting out lines about how he's actually religious, or asking what's his name if he can be vulnerable in his vehicle. Bro, he had great lines, and I love that he went at it like Michael Caine went at Muppet Christmas Carol. Like, he took it so serious, and he showed you how good he is. And we've seen him on SNL. He's a funny, funny, funny dude.
Right.
We've seen him in the most serious movies, you know, made in the last 5 years. He can do both.
Yeah.
He's my Hollywood god now. He is my new Leo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
He is. And many people's, obviously.
Yeah.
He's got quite a fan base. I'm not sure if you knew this.
I did, yeah.
Timothée Chalamet.
Yes.
Yeah. Can we talk about the tech guy?
Yeah, man. Yeah, we haven't even touched on old
Peter?
Hybrid Elon
Bezos,
Zuck,
Elon
Peter
Zuck.
Thiel.
Peter Thiel was definitely in there, too.
He's all of them.
This guy was, his teeth were the most unsettling piece of the movie. Like, the comet physically ripping through the planet was one thing, but that man's teeth kept me up.
Yeah,
a little bit last night.
As a viewer of stuff, of content that is delivered, you know, via film or TV or
electronically
or whatever else, I'm far more open to this parody. I think we need to shift to more of this and stop with the Trump parody.
I mean,
how many times you can just let it go, man.
Destroyed any chance we ever had at getting humor out of that situation. He really did. And ironically, with SNL. I'm just done with it. It's not fun for me anymore.
I don't think it's fun for anybody. Like, it's one of those things where it's just like, man, you know, maybe if we stop
It'll help.
It'll help instead of hurt.
Maybe we shut the fuck up with, yeah, maybe that's not the fucking key anymore. And I mean, this is something I noticed when I was, honestly, when I was on the other side politically. I was like, man, we really got to stop bashing each other. I think the divide is getting worse, and it is. It's like...
Well, it's, you know how, like, every time we, like, we somebody kills 25 people, and we, like, plaster their image and their name all over the news?
Yes.
And that's, like, a thing that we should probably not do, because that's exactly why those types of people end up doing that, is
a lot
because
of them
they know they're
going to
get
yeah.
a little notoriety, infamy, 15 minutes of fame, whether they're dead or not. It doesn't matter. They just know that this is going to be...
They're going to be a person.
They're
going right?
giant headline breaking huge news for 24 hours until the next one happens. It's like that too for me. It's like if we stop making fun of it, maybe if we stop trying to parody it when it's not able to be parodied, if we just like let it die in the corner over there, maybe there won't be so much like
vitriol around it. Yeah.
Or intention to become the next one.
Right. I'm with you. I mean, I'm completely with you. And it's a thing that we have, that as a country, we have been aware of since you and I were in our teens. Like, they started talking about this in the media and how it's a problem. We just haven't fixed it because it's very profitable, which is, again, what this movie really became about, right? It's like, when it came down to it, and man, that was a twist I didn't see coming. When she leaves the room and they're about to blow up this thing, they've successfully launched 40 spaceships with nukes on them or whatever to go blow up this comet. And then the president leaves the room because tech freaky CEO guy came in, the silver fox with crazy teeth.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what's coming. I don't know where they're going to take this. And I laughed aloud when they were like, when he gives the presentation to tell everyone the comet has like $132 trillion worth of precious metals and materials.
Was it unobtainium that was
like,
in there?
He named every one of them, Barrett. Unobtainium included, I believe. And man, that was a moment because I was just like, holy shit, that's brilliant. Because that has been the issue time and again with issue after issue after issue after issue, including global warming. It's like, our government has very much been willing to be like, yeah, there's for sure a problem. And one of those problems is that we're getting hella money from them. So we can't stop.
Yeah.
And then we're all like, what? And then the wheel just keeps on turning. Money keeps smothering out truth, right? Or like goodness.
Yeah, and just our general tie between politics and corporate money, like that,
right.
That's
is not good.
It's
never been worse.
Arguably, one of the worst things that is happening in with America in general.
I'm trying to think of something worse, and I can't. Somebody's yelling inflation at their radio, but no, no, this is worse. But yeah, so this movie attacked all that. It kind of wrapped in all these different conversations around what is wrong with America. And our media and our politics and our people, our focus as a people. And I liked the all the different little characters it gave us to look into these different pieces of that conversation. And then the real world moments it gave us with viewers watching their TVs with their families, etc. It kind of gave us all these rent, you know, it went full Adam McKay at different points,
yeah,
which I like I like where he's willing to play with stuff like that. He did a little of the what's the banking one?
Big Short.
The Big Short stuff, but not as much. And it was. Oh, by the way, you know how the tech guy predicts, and you're going to die alone, and you're going to be eaten by a Brontorock. Mm-hmm. We don't know what it means.
Right.
And he's right about her.
Yeah.
He's wrong about Leo. Leo died at a table full of people.
It's true.
It's an interesting little point they made. But he was also wrong about the whole fucking mission, I suppose, because it failed miserably, and then he flew 2,000 people off of the planet. And then it went like 32,000 years into the future.
20,000, something like
20,
that.
20,000 years in the future. They all pop out butt-ass on some alien planet and then get surrounded by Brontoroks immediately.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Straight up.
And that was one of three endings. How much do you think it cost to put the extra scene in where Jonah Hill comes out of the rubble?
Not
50
that much.
Grand? 30 grand?
Sure.
What the fuck? That's like what he got paid to do Wolf of Wall Street. Did they really need this? I thought that one was excessive and they should have left it the fuck alone because it made it... This movie couldn't decide whether it wanted me to take it seriously or just be like, this is a throwaway. Like, that was the oddest thing. Because after all the ending and the explosions and the having to watch the world end, I was like, God damn, that was heavy. And I think I wanted to sit with that. But then it was like, and here's Jonah Hill with some more jokes. And I was like, ah, you're right. We're all fucked. Screw it. I'm going to go smoke some pot. So, you know, I was taken out of my activist mindset that I had achieved, Barrett. I was going to go be an environmental fucking activist. I was going to be like Adrian Grenier or whatever his name is, bro. I'm anti-straws now. And then they put that Jonah Hill scene in, and now I don't give a fuck. So,
damn.
I hope we all get eaten by Brontorox.
It's only a matter of time. That's what they say.
B minus for me. B plus? Okay. I don't know. You fucked it up for me, man. I enjoyed it more before this. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes I didn't like something. We discuss it and I'm like, I loved it. Sometimes I'm like, I really loved it. And then we discuss it and I'm like, it was all right.
Yeah. How about this? Mm. Would you recommend?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's worth a watch.
The movie?
I think it's worth a watch because the performances and the cameos and the really Timothée Chalamet's performance alone to me is worth a watch. But Leo, man, how are you going to not watch the latest Leo movie?
Yeah, it's also, I mean, just in the ongoing, like, collapse of the...
society?
Theater industry, I guess, movie theater industry. Just the way all of this is going. I'm sure you heard about a quote that was captured from a Ben Affleck interview. He was like, he said, whether it was tongue-in-cheek or for real or not for real, or
he was just making a point.
Oh, he said that The Last Duel... is probably the last movie he'll ever make that is in theaters, essentially. Because, and he like, with a straight face, he was saying this. But basically, he was coyly commenting on how...
movie theaters are done.
The only thing that will be in movie theaters in 5 years is Spider-Man 7, which absolutely destroyed box office records.
$1 billion in a week.
2 weekends ago.
Yeah. No Way Home.
It did, like... pre-pandy numbers in the middle of an Omicron surge. So it was like, people were saying like, I mean, they were hyperbolically saying that it could have done $1 billion in its first weekend, had it not been a pandemic.
It ended up doing $1 billion its first week though, I think.
Maybe globally.
Right.
Yeah.
It did get up there with
263 million. I think it was the second largest opening ever.
God damn.
So...
and this is as what we talk about is happening. The collapse of the movie theater industry and No Way Home still.
Everything else is just like...
But, yeah.
West Side Story?
Nobody
saw it. Miserable flop.
Nobody saw it.
But it's like, that's a movie that I would watch if it was on Disney Plus already. You know, if we have time, like I'm throwing a bone to the Broadway boys out and girls out there.
Absolutely.
Today. You know, we ride for Broadway in here.
Sad
to see all the closings, the last couple of weeks with the surge as well.
Sucks.
But yeah, man, nothing right now can succeed, especially not in the middle of a pandemic, unless it's Spider-Man, man. Look, unless it's Marvel, unless it's...
I mean, how many years, we're probably three years into the discussion around what is going to happen with the streaming wars versus the movie theaters. And it's crazy that the pandemic obviously hit fast forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the streaming side of things. And these guys, it's the Ben Affleck, you know, smoking a cig gif. That's the movie theater industry right now.
But it's and
meme,
and,
not
you know,
gif.
And that's kind of what I'm saying about Don't Look Up is like, it's really easy to tell you guys to like, yeah, this is worth 2 hours of your time on Netflix.
For sure.
You know?
But if I had to tell you to go to a theater,
it's a no for me.
Dude, I don't think I'm telling you to go to a movie theater for a movie anymore unless that shit is like all time for me, like a fucking Batman or something, like The Dark Knight. I don't know, bro.
So,
it would take a lot. It would take a lot.
Yeah.
My last comment on this film.
Yes.
Is Leo is now in the phase of his career where he's like, he's kind of bloated.
Well, they bloated him up for this.
Okay,
he was supposed to be homely. As you said.
And comely.
He's
America's sexiest scientist with a bloated face. But yeah, so there was moments where I was like, man, he's in that young Jack Nicholson phase of his career now.
He didn't get all jizzed up for this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
don't worry, they'll jizz him up again.
So you think he can still be Leo? Like,
oh, yeah.
Okay. Because Brad took his shirt off in that most recent one and shit was popping.
Yeah.
So Leo's got to stay...
But that's never been Leo.
I know, but he needs to be in the realm. Not the ripped realm, but like the sexiness realm.
Yeah,
he must maintain his status. And in this movie, I was just like, motherfucker eats too many hot dogs or something.
To that end, though, as Leo, I think that he is so devil may care with all of that. You know, he is kind of like
a slob.
He is New Jack. He is. You made a perfect comparison. And yeah. Trust me, Jack was, I'm sure, also fucking 25-year-olds for as long as he was sitting front row at the Academy Awards in his purple tinted sunglasses, looking all manner of slovenly, or
and at every Lakers game.
You know,
yeah,
like he was. He had that same kind of...
Bro, I've seen pictures of Jack back in the day. He was doing shit, yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, like, you know, Jack Nicholson sitting at the Lakers games was also doing all that.
Right, but right? Not Jack. The most recent version of him at the Lakers games I have in my mind, he is elderly and can barely move.
Is he still going to Lakers games?
I think he recently stopped.
Okay.
Because the discussion around who's going to take his slot, which Leo has been the main...
Yeah.
How old is
Jack Nicholson now?
Oh, man, I'm going to take a stab at it and say he's 78.
Whoa!
What do you think? I'm going to Google it. So
I'm
going to
say 76.
Jack Nicholson is 84.
Whoa!
Holy fuck!
I did not... I had... Okay, that's... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He looks old as shit.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, it's not good. There's 85-year-old actors dropping, like, every day.
I know.
Somebody died yesterday.
John Madden.
John Madden was 85. Rest in peace.
Yeah, that's right, man. Yeah, okay, so he is definitely older.
Yeah.
Man.
Can we just comment that John Madden's death has produced some of the worst takes I've ever seen in my life?
Such as?
Mainly regarding race and his feeding into what has been called a plantation mindset around sports. I'm on Twitter.
John Madden fostered this?
No. That's the accusation by some random fuckhead on Twitter.
That John Madden did this, though?
Yes, that... Via his video games with EA Sports, that he dehumanized athletes and fed into the plantation mindset that has particularly taken over the NFL, which I was just like, man, that is a stretch. He was a great football player and then a great commentator. Yeah. Let's just calm down. And I don't know how much credit he should be given for those video games, bro. I don't think John was in the stew doing coding. He slapped his fucking name on an EA game. Come on, guys.
Yeah. Vince Young, in case you didn't know this, he's not grilling your steak over at Vince Young Steakhouse.
That's true. Yeah. That's
nor did
true.
He kill the cow, nor is he waiting your table. So
no. In fact, he's not even getting that much money out of that shit anymore because he signed some bad deals.
It's just his name on the facade.
Okay. Well, any other takeaways before we move on?
No. That's all I got, man.
We want you to watch it, but also it's not the greatest thing ever.
Right.
But the cast is worth a watch.
Yeah.
For sure. Today's episode is brought to you by Bird Dogs, making the most comfortable shorts in the world with the built-in underwear you know and love for living life and making love. It's like, why wear shorts with underwear when you can wear even better shorts with built-in underwear, thus creating less laundry, thus saving the planet, thus making you a hero who is also better looking and more comfortable. Bird Dogs! But did you know they make pants as well for these winter months? Pants for work, pants for play, pants for golf. They're new joggers. Next level, comfortable. And what's more, for listening to OCC, for being a member of the Clam Fam, when you use the code OCC at checkout, when you get yourself a pair of the most comfortable pants or shorts in the world with built-in underwear or without, if you don't want to be a rebel, Bird Dogs is giving away a free whistling football like the Nerf football you grew up with, except it's a Bird Dogs whistling football when you use the code OCC at checkout on birddogs.com. So go today, this holiday season, birddogs.com, most comfortable pants or shorts in the world, phenomenal joggers, built-in underwear. Lessen the load of laundry. Save the world like Leo did. Be America's sexiest scientist on birddogs.com when you check out with the code OCC.
Sexy.
I am almost done with The Great, season 2.
Okay, I watched the episode where her mom shows up last night. So I think that was episode 7. So I've got a few more to go.
Oh, it's a real treat. Fun story you got in front of you there, Barrett.
Jillian Anderson?
Yeah.
Shouts?
Yeah, man.
Let's just get her in everything. I'm totally fine with her popping up in Sex Education and The Crown and The Great. And just put her on Sex... She better be on next season of Succession. How about that?
Yes.
Would you not love to see that?
I would love to see that.
I know you would.
I love Jillian and Gillian Anderson. I can never decide which one it is. But her character, not what I expected.
Okay, well, no spoilers.
I'm not going to spoil, but just not at all what I expected. And that
now,
show...
Now, mom might be hot for husband is all I know at this point. So.
Yeah, no comment. But that show is undeniably one of the best things on TV still. It is so fun. I've loved season 2. I thought, let me put it this way.
Yep.
There was a point where I was concerned the way I was concerned with Succession season 3.
Yes.
And then by the end of season 2 of The Great, I was like, God damn, good, good, great. I want to like fist bump everybody in the writer's room. Like, you did it, you did it, you did it.
Yeah, I have really enjoyed this season so far. It's maybe even more of like a... We obviously loved season one to death. I think we both had it as our number one show in 2019. This season has almost been easier to like watch quickly, to like binge episodes at a time.
Yeah.
And part of that is also like my one critique so far of the season is that, you know, if you haven't seen this, minor spoiler here, but like, if you've not watched season one of The Great, but season two almost has what I'm calling a Leo problem. And that in season one, Leo was like such like the emotional center of the season. You know, he was like what kept everything kind of like really grounded and something like emotional and meaningful.
Yes.
And in season two, it's been far more of like the politics and maneuvering around the ascension to the throne and like the coup and like how that's all shaking out.
Yeah.
And so it's been a little bit more plot driven and a little bit less like kind of I don't want to say character driven, but like emotionally
deep, in some ways.
Driven. Yeah, and so which has made it a little bit less, have a little less depth, and that's my one thing. And I
that may be repaired by the time you're done.
It totally could be. And I do think that it's picking up steam here in these last couple of episodes that I've watched.
It does, for sure.
The now we're getting into season two, kind of minor spoilers, but like when I really liked when she attempts something ginormous, like freeing the serfs.
Right.
That brought some of that weight to it, of that like real concern as to what could happen or what might happen. My one other thing, plot wise, that I'll throw out here is leaving Peter alive and imprisoned. That's one thing. But letting him have free access to all of his supporters and friends?
Yeah.
What the fuck, lady?
Okay, there are definitely pieces of season two that logically I'm like, okay, come on. You were just so on top of everything, and now you're like making absolutely asinine decisions on a daily basis.
You're just like letting him hang out with his besties? What do you think they're going to do?
But I think it's largely, I mean, and again, light spoilers here, largely due to her health situation. Mm-hmm. And then they do get, like, I'll say this. There was a lot of the first several episodes that I was kind of like, what? That by the end of the season, I was like, okay, thank you for at least smoothing it over for me so that
kind
I feel...
Kind of addressing it a little bit.
Yes, yeah, so that there's reasoning for some of the more questionable decisions that have been made.
Okay.
But I also do think they are... I mean, look, the sophomore season of a show like The Great
is very difficult.
So tough.
It really is. I totally agree. And especially because, you know, the Great was... This was based on Tony McNamara's play... He created the show and I think is the showrunner, and this is based on his play. And so it's one of these ones where it's like, you know, I think they expected this to be a series, but they based the season one off the play. And they didn't necessarily have anything to go to next. So it's like they definitely, that is always a tough spot for a show to be in, where you kind of lose the source material and then you kind of have to fly the nest, right?
Yeah.
You have to go soar on your own.
I recall this happening recently with an HBO series. What was that?
It certainly did. And so not to be some kind of bumps in the road are to be expected, I think.
For sure.
But but there's no question that season two is equally as enjoyable to watch as the first season. Performances are still great. I cannot get it. I just want a loop. I just want a whole compilation of Nicholas Hoult as Peter saying the word pussy because
it's so good. I mean, I'll say this. Season two, one of the great triumphs is what they do with his character. And just the finding depth in a character that is
very shallow,
as shallow as he is incredibly tough, and it's sort of the challenge that I kind of see them giving themselves over the course of season two. And man, it's just, he is the thing where I'm, you know, where by the time I was done with season two, I was like, someone needs to nominate this man for things.
Yeah.
Quickly, please.
Yeah.
Because I want him to be motivated to continue to do this, because it is one of the funnest characters I have ever watched on any show ever.
Yeah. It's
And that might just be
really
part of
superb.
The toxic masculinity in me speaking. I don't think it is. It's that he is a fucking hilarious embodiment of like all of the shittiest like little whims and ideas that all people have. If you could just act like you wanted to all the time, doing whatever you wanted because you thought you were ordained by God to be a king among men.
Yeah.
And that is a hilarious concept because it also applies to each of us individually.
Yeah. We should absolutely, we're recommending this big time.
Yes, the great season two.
Let's put a pin in it, and next week I will be finished with it. Are you finished?
Yeah, huzzah.
Okay. Huzzah. So next week we'll discuss the ending, and
let's do it. We'll
talk about how it all came together.
I have no comment on this documentary, The Alpinist, other than to say it should be watched.
Alpinist, Netflix as well, right? Mm. I got served that in the algo.
And climbing,
it looks pretty sweet.
Climbing dock, you know, climbing like
rock climbing.
What's that other freak he climbed? He went and climbed
free
without
solo?
Ropes.
Free solo.
What's that freak's name? I forget.
It's not. Is it Alex Honnold?
Yes. Yes.
But Alex Honnold is in The Alpinist too, right? He's one of the talking heads.
He gives commentary on this other climber.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a prick at different times. I love him. He's hilarious. He's so weird. These climbers are all like that, though. They're very weird. These thrill-seeking, like risk-taking lifestyle people are some of the most interesting people in the world to me.
Absolutely.
This particular documentary is the most difficult climbing doc I've watched in terms of emotions, but also probably the most impactful in terms of takeaways. So, yeah, The Alpinist. Why can't I say that word? But I do think it is on Netflix, if I'm not mistaken.
It is, yeah.
And those are the things I've been watching, but you've crushed an entire list of things.
Yeah.
Would you like to throw one or two at us?
Yeah, let me throw one or two at you. Let me start. I've already mentioned, I told the Broadway boys and the Broadway girls that I was gonna get to them. So I watched Tick, Tick, Boom on Netflix.
Okay.
This stars Andrew Garfield, who also may or may not have cameo in the new Spider-Man film. And
I'm pretty sure he does based on the amount of coverage they've given him over the past couple weeks.
Yeah. And Vanessa Hudgens, among others. And it is the story of, I'm going to forget his last name. Jonathan, help me out here. Are you looking it up?
Yes. Yes, I can look it up. Jonathan Larson.
Jonathan Larson.
American composer Jonathan Larson.
Who most famously created and composed Rent.
Oh, shit, okay.
The Broadway musical Rent.
Okay.
And if you're not kind of familiar with Rent, it debuted in 1996. And Rent basically paved the way for, like, your modern-day pop and rock musicals.
Right.
So whether that's Hamilton or Avenue Q or Book of Mormon or, like, any of these other ones that, where you are, like, playing the songs in your car because you like them so much, right? Jonathan Larson is if you talk to Bo Burnham, he's probably a Jonathan Larson guy.
Right.
Like, that's what Rent did, is kind of created this new way that musicals could be in the way they could sound like. Jonathan Larson himself, very inspired by Stephen Sondheim, another super, super famous Broadway playwright, composer, etc.
Broadway boys.
And so this is the story. Let me see if I can frame this up. Jonathan Larson was writing his first musical. He was going on the age of 30. He felt very unaccomplished. And it did not make it. He ended up like having like a little showing, a little showcase for it.
Okay. Okay.
But it didn't get picked up. Nobody wanted to produce it and make it. And he had to move on. The next musical that he wrote was Tick, Tick, Boom, which is the story of him writing that first musical.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's kind of meta like that.
Right, right.
But it's also what preceded Rent. The next thing that he wrote after Tick, Tick, Boom was Rent.
Cool.
So it's this really, really cool window into kind of his life in between, you know, kind of his first failure
and then his
first mild success, which you know then, like, you know, became Rent. Shocking story. I knew kind of vaguely who Jonathan Larson was. I kind of knew generally about the importance of Rent.
Right.
What I did not know was that Jonathan Larson died when he was 35, the day before the first production of Rent. He didn't even get to see it on stage, dude.
Ugh, that's awful.
So really, like, just kind of a fascinating story to dive into.
Yeah, that sounds great.
If you're a fan of kind of your modern day musicals of all the ones that I just mentioned, you will really, really like the music in this. It's very catchy. It's very, you know, it's show tunes, but it's pop and it's rock and it's just a lot of fun. And Andrew Garfield, man, this guy's getting all sorts of press recently.
Hey,
and
he's one of the hot boys.
I think Tick, Tick, Boom is a fringe Oscar film. So
he'll get more buzz there, potentially.
Stay, you know, I guarantee it'll be, we're skipping the Golden Globes. The Golden Globes were canceled. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
But were they to be still on this year, you know how they divide it into musical and comedy and drama, for sure this would be nominated for musical and comedy. Yeah.
Tick, Tick, Boom.
Tick, Tick, Boom. Another one that's very easily available. You can watch it on Netflix. Worth your time, especially if you're a hashtag Broadway boy or hashtag Broadway girl.
Fucking love it.
Yeah.
Broadway boys update and girls.
Broadway boys update. Yeah.
Yeah. Phenomenal stuff. All right. We'll save the rest of it for us for next week, then.
Okay.
And I'll try to watch some of what you've watched. So you'll just have to provide
the
me
other.
With
your, the,
just
I'll
give
just,
it out for us. So
I'll just give you the other stuff that
yeah.
I'm watching. Let me pull it up here. Let's see. I am also watching Station 11 on HBO Max, a show that is about a pandemic.
That's fun. What a fun choice.
Yeah. I'm almost done with Curb Your Enthusiasm, the newest season.
I just saw the finale aired.
Yes.
Man, I haven't even fucking started. I need to get in there.
Big Mouth Season 5 is available on Netflix. I've been kind of casually watching that.
Nice.
And I have been watching the Sex and the City reboot, and Just Like That, also on HBO. Got some thoughts on that one, too.
Okay, so. I want to hear those, because I've got some thoughts on that one, too. I caught a glimpse of it.
Yeah?
I'll just put it that way. Next week, Barrett.
You want to save that?
Yeah, I'll save that. Okay. Next week. Follow us on Instagram, @ Oysters, Clams, Cockles, on Twitter, @ Clams and Cockles, on TikTok, @ Oysters, Clams, Cockles. Follow Mr. Barrett Dudley, @ Barrett Dudley, on Twitter and Instagram. Follow me, Ross Bolin, on Twitter and Instagram, @ W.R. Bolin. Barrett and I will be back next week with more of the best in TV and movies, your favorite shows and films. Send your friends and family here to OCC to listen weekly with Barrett and I. And if you want to watch The Sopranos with us, go to patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Until next time, we appreciate you. Thank you for being here. Adieu.